May I have your attention, please?
Welcome to the Life in Tech podcast with Jay and Saad, where every week they will be sharing their experiences, insights, and opinions about working in the technology industry.
Simply the best.
We're back for another episode of the Life in Tech podcast with Jay and Saad. Today's topic is one that I have been really looking forward to discussing. It's around the topic of design engineers. Now, a lot of you may not have even heard of design engineers and are probably wondering, Jay, what the hell are you talking about? You've just made up a new role. Well, if you Google it, you're going to see job descriptions all over the place. Why? Because we believe that this is the future of tech. And there's a few reasons for that. And first of all, let's take this back a little bit and define what is a design engineer. Now, from my perspective, a design engineer is a person who has the ability to be creative, understands UX methodologies, understands UI principles, but can also code as well. So they can actually create and build the solutions that they're dreaming up, which creates a very, very dangerous character in a good way. Because it means that they can literally dominate the tech landscape, in my opinion. But Saad, what's your opinion on this, man?
I think design engineering is something that is going to be at the forefront of product design, technology, building apps, building websites, building products. I think with the amount of engineers and designers that exist today, it's a natural transition that designers learn how to code. And engineers are transcending into the design space. I'm one of them.
Yeah.
Right? But why I say that in particular, because I think the language that is, the terminologies and the language that is being shared amongst both designers and developers, engineers, now is becoming more apparent. For example, if you mention JavaScript, React.js, you know, these type of technologies to a designer, that's been in product for quite some time. More time, they're going to know what you're talking about. They might not know how to write JavaScript.
They might have an idea.
They'll have an idea of what is the technology, what's been used for, and why it exists. And I saw an article recently from a senior product designer from Facebook.
Okay.
And he has some predictions. I'm not going to mention his name. It's just... Just Google it. You'll find his name.
Everyone, just go onto LinkedIn. Go onto Google. Just type in Facebook predictions around this topic.
So it's, he has a prediction about the design engineering role, right? And he made a very good point, and he said that more engineers are going to become designers, and more designers are going to become engineers.
Ooh, okay, interesting.
And he said, as it progresses, as the industry progresses, and apps and websites are being built, more innovation is not going to happen on those mediums. It's going to happen outside of those mediums. And what he was referring to, things like, you know, the glasses that Apple and Google investing in, and these, the metaverse and these type of things.
Yeah.
And he made a very good point. And he said, on my team, because he's a senior product designer, and he said, on my team, a lot of designers have computer science degrees. And they're writing their own JavaScript in an animation library that's called Frame Emotion.
Yeah. Right? I know about Frame Emotion.
Now, Frame Emotion and Figma ties in
very
brilliantly
nicely.
Together.
Very nicely,
right?
Yeah.
So what I found amazing about that is that they have computer science backgrounds, not just tech background, a computer science background, but yet they're designers, they're product designers. So what does this say to us? It says that just because you have a background in computer science, or you have a background in product design or human interaction design or graphic design, that you can't bridge the gap, you can't transition into the other space. But this type of examples are saying the opposite and refuting those claims that because you studied a specific thing, you have to now go down that route. And that's completely wrong, because Frame Emotion, you have to write code to implement it.
Yeah.
But it's solving design problems. It's not, you see what I'm saying?
So we got the frame again.
Yeah. So it's very interesting. And I think whether you call it a design engineer, whatever you want to put the role as, like whatever you want to name the role, it doesn't matter. The reality is that the principles are being actualized today.
Yeah, but ultimately, Saad, like what you're saying is that they can transition from one field to another field easily.
Mm-hmm.
But the design engineer, they're in both fields at the same time.
Right, right.
Right? They're on both sides of the court.
Yeah.
Which makes them an extremely valuable talent within any organization, right?
Yeah.
I've been thinking about this like ever since I heard the term design engineer, and it just intrigues me because think about where the world is going, right? Like almost like 7 years ago or something like that in the UK, they started introducing like coding into primary schools.
Yeah.
So these are kids who are 5 years old learning how to program.
Yeah.
And now 2022, like a lot of these kids are in their teenage years, like they're soon to be going into university and then into the job market. The possibilities for them are endless.
Right.
Like we're at the cusp of a transition in the tech field where you're going to get people who already have the training and more than the fundamentals of coding and programming going into their career fields. And then if you pluck the creative ones out of that and the ones who have a vested interest or just a general interest in UX methodologies and they've learned how to apply them and they understand design principles and UI psychology and they know what looks good and what doesn't, that's like a dream character. Like, you know, like if you're playing like a PlayStation game, like Tekken or something, and you've unlocked like the best character in the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's it, like that's game over.
It's just a very valuable individual. And we spoke about this in our previous episode about time and value.
Mm.
And this type of individual that has such a skill set or has the potential to reach that skill set, because if they're still learning at such a young age, then the possibilities are endless because technology moves so rapidly. And if they're keeping up with the pace of technology and, you know, constantly learning about new code concepts or programming concepts, but also learning about UI design and UX design and new principles and, you know, new trends and stuff like that, and learning the applications to build their own stuff, then that's a very valuable individual.
That's what I'm most excited about is the ability to build their own stuff. Like, do you know how many people have fantastic ideas, brilliant ideas, and they're just at a stop at the very beginning because they don't know what to do?
Right, right.
Like they don't know how to build it. They don't know how to design it.
Yeah.
They don't know how to kind of solve the problem, but they know that this idea is going to pop and it will be a global success, but they just haven't got the tools.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if you can do everything from inception, like all the way through to build and test.
It's a very, that's very
crazy.
Valuable. Yeah, it's a valuable,
like
valuable
you could. Individual. I feel like this is not just like it's going to change the landscape of tech, but it's also going to change the startup landscape because a lot of these kids that have these skill sets, as they mature, as they figure out the world and identify why things are the way they are and start to question why they are the way they are, they're going to start coming up with crazy solutions and they'll be able to just go for it and just build.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and build fully fledged solutions that work well, have a great experience, and, you know, we'll go all the way. And this is something that I'm kind of incredibly kind of excited for because you just don't know what direction it's going to take us.
Exactly.
And then what happens to us?
That's, you know, it's funny. It's, you know, great minds think alike. I was literally, my next question is, do you find that intimidating though? Because it's like, hold on a minute. It's kind of like the full stack developer, you know, for the front end dev or for the back end dev, it could be a bit, I wouldn't say intimidating, but for someone who knows both of those areas very strongly and full stack is actually quite common, but a lot of companies don't adopt it. They rather have people who specialize in one or the other. But this whole design engineer concept, this role, do you find it intimidating that it could replace the designer or the developer who is focused in that niche?
I don't think so, or at least not in the near term. Because let's face it, it's a lot of work, man. Like if you're gonna do all the ethnographic research, you're gonna kind of do all of the upfront studies, the quant, the qual. You're gonna come up with the solutions. You're gonna wireframe tests, do UI design, and build.
Yeah. See, and that's the thing. We need to make something very clear here. When we say design, we're not just referring to UI design or UX design, we're talking about the whole
end-to-end process.
The end-to-end process design.
And if you can engineer that too,
yeah,
like, yes, is you're extremely valuable,
yeah,
but that's a lot of work. And companies want to move fast, right?
Right, right.
So I think there's a particular place for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But I think there's still definitely a requirement for specialists kind of across organizations as well.
Yeah, yeah, I agree to that. I agree to that for sure.
But what about you? Like, do you feel like a threat kind of by this new kind of career path or no. role?
No, because I have a design background. So I could, you know, just fit right in. But I wouldn't say like intimidated or threatened by it, but for sure it's something that people have to adapt to.
Mm.
Like, imagine the conversations that this particular person is going to, you know, start in the organizations that they work in.
Mm.
Like, a project manager is not dealing with a technical person, only a technical person.
Mm-hmm.
They're dealing with a creative technical person.
Yeah.
You know, so the conversations, the terminologies, the language that's going to be used by this particular person is something that everyone has to adapt to. And when you are dealing with them, you need to understand that whatever language you use, if you're a technical person or a creative, they're going to understand you.
Yeah.
So you need to kind of approach them in a different way.
Mm.
It's like if you have a technical project manager, not just a project manager.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to speak to them in a way that I address a PM because I understand that they know code. So if I say to them, this is going to take me 3 days, and they're like, hold on a minute, I can build it in half a day. What are you talking about? You know, it's you approach people in a way where you know what they're going to understand. And I'm not saying to do that to manipulate anyone or to lie to anyone or anything like that. But you approach individuals in the language that they know. So for example, if I'm going to now discuss a solution, a technical solution with a stakeholder, they might not be technical.
Mm.
So I need to kind of construct what I'm going to speak about in plain English.
Yeah.
For everybody to understand. And I think the whole design engineer individual is going to require more specialized conversations that have to be thought about quite heavily.
True, true. I think, like, yeah, I mean, they'll be able to talk many languages, like, around the business.
Exactly.
Right?
And that's very valuable because you can pull that individual in so many different scenarios.
Mm. Also, like, I think, like, we need to make, like, one thing clear is, like, this design engineer isn't somebody who is a designer and knows code, or is an engineer and knows
design,
right? Because I did front end design. I did front end engineering.
Right, it's a thing, right?
Front end engineering for 2 years before I moved into UX, and that you did design before you moved into engineering.
Right.
Now, when you kind of take a particular path, you become specialized in that discipline, but you start to lose certain skills in your previous discipline, right? So for me, it would be the kind of engineering. You still understand the general kind of principles, but you're not as on it as you used to be. Do you know what I mean? You're not as kind of productive as you used to be in that particular field. Now, you can teach yourself back up to a particular level, for sure, but we can't call ourselves design engineers. But a design engineer needs to know the ins and outs of everything.
Right.
How to construct everything, how to run the studies, how to produce the design.
Right.
How to test and validate their assumptions in various different ways, as well as build it in various different ways as well. And this is why, again, we keep using the word valuable, but they really are. But I feel like they're gonna be most valuable in startups, because we've already seen it with product designers. As soon as this kind of unicorn of a product designer emerged, this hybrid between UI and UX design, all of a sudden, all of these startups that we know and love, who are no longer startups, they're huge companies, were investing very heavily in product designers. Why? Because they wanted to be very lean in their approach, be cost effective, and get somebody who understands both sides of the equation so that they can actually deliver the results.
Mm-hmm.
This design engineer, I think, it's going to be another form of that.
Right.
And you're going to see a lot of startups advertising for this role, snapping up these talented people. And this isn't just something which is in regions where, you know, kind of tech is like world renowned, right? Like Silicon Valley's and in the UK and Europe. Like, I'm seeing advertising for coding schools.
Mm-hmm.
in India, in Africa, in Southeast Asia, everywhere across the globe is investing in equipping the next generation with the skill set to be able to build.
Yeah.
So if you take the ones who are naturally gifted and have an eye for design as well, if they're interested in UX and UI design, they'll naturally fall into that category of a design engineer. And that's going to make them extremely compelling as a candidate, kind of when they go for interviews.
For sure.
Or if they try and kind of start up their own thing.
Yeah, for sure.
So I feel like that is generally kind of where the world is heading, this design engineer role. And I'm here for it, man. I'm here for it. I'm not sure where that will place me. I guess the way that we conduct interviews and stuff, you know, would have to change. Like, how do we assess somebody who's a design engineer? Like, we're very well versed, like both of us, in terms of assessing the candidates who are applying for roles within our disciplines. But how do you assess a design engineer? And I guess, would you set them challenges or tasks? Like, what would you do if you say create a role for a design engineer and you got some candidates and you scheduled them for interview? How would you determine whether or not they're a good design engineer, like an actual real one, or they're just a designer that knows a bit of code?
Well, firstly, I would, you know, I think that interview processes in general, especially on the engineering side, the front end engineering sides are quite broken. And you'll find a lot of engineers saying the same thing or something very similar to that. Because it's the fact of the matter is that sometimes it's just way over the top for front end engineering specifically. Now, despite that, if it was a design engineer specifically, there's one skill that just covers everything, and that's problem solving. So I would want to see how they problem solve. I want to see their process. And that process doesn't necessarily have to be around design, and it doesn't have to necessarily be around code. It might be a random question. And a lot of the big companies, they do this, but I wouldn't go to such a length. But, you know, just give them quite a trivial type of question. And whether they get it right or wrong, it doesn't matter. That's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the process, the mind process, the mindset, the thinking process, how they approach something, how they deal with it in the middle, the bulk of the middle part of it, how they end with their solution. All of that gives me a lot of information. And then I would start to go more in depth with, like, okay, so what projects have you worked on? What, how did you contribute to that project? Was you more of a engineer on the code side, or was you more, you know, hands-on designing? What was the research that went behind it? What was your UX contribution? Stuff like that. And I'm not looking for necessarily right or wrong answers.
Yeah.
I'm looking for process. Process. Because someone who just shines from a lot of the out of the crowd is the one who has the process, the one who has that ability to not necessarily know everything, but they'll find out.
Yeah.
They'll find out one way or another. They'll find out. If they don't know how to do something, they don't know how to build something, they don't know how to design something, they'll find out. And that's a process, you know, being comfortable with learning and not knowing something. I would look for that individual.
Interesting, interesting. I know this is like slightly off topic, but what are your thoughts on like setting candidates' tasks as part of the interview process?
I mean, the reality is if you give someone a task to take home, they can get someone else to do it. They can outsource. They might know a designer from down the street that can help them.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not against it. It's just, I think it's a very easy way. Actually, there's a lot of companies that have been guilty of this that I've heard of. I've never worked for one.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a lot of companies that have been guilty of this that actually use interview tasks as production code.
That is cheeky.
I've heard this happen quite a few times. But that was just a side note. But coming back to
that takes me back to my design days when I was at uni. Oh yeah.
I'm not against it, but I'm more about the live, you know, hands-on back and forth between myself and the candidate and just discussion. I'm about dialogue. I love just discussion and it could be technical, it could be creative, it could be whatever. But because the fact of the matter is, look, someone might be terrible at interviews. They might be anxious. They might be, you know, just, they just don't like interviews. They don't like that setting. They feel like they're being judged in a way which is not appealing to them or whatever. And what happens when you bring those types of feelings and emotions out of someone is they're not going to perform their best. So the best way is to get someone to shine, to bring out their best in them, is to make them feel relaxed. And I think giving a take-home test in a way is a good thing for that, because they don't feel like someone's over their shoulder. They can have some time, but then you're not really...
There's no time in the real world, man.
That as well.
Do you think like, there's a few things with take-home tests, yeah? And just before I kind of go into that, like, you mentioned something about some companies are using the codes for production, yeah?
Yeah.
That just takes me back. When I was at uni and I was studying product design, all of these big brands used to come in, right? And they used to be like, oh, like, you've got this challenge. And the challenge is to design the next big thing for X Corp or whatever, yeah? And all of us would like be in the workshops and be drafting like our best creative ideas, trying to get picked by this big company. And then someone would get selected, but I'm pretty sure that they're analyzing everyone's work.
Yeah.
Because everyone's work could potentially be used as a product. And I mean, I never personally followed any of it up, but I'm pretty sure I can put a lot of money on it that they've actually manufactured some stuff that that didn't win the competition. Because you've got like a class of like hundreds of people, right?
Right.
And then leading on to the whole kind of take home task thing. Yes, like people can definitely kind of outsource it and kind of get advice and tips, which is why I'm not a big fan of them. A lot of companies also tend to get the candidate to solve a problem for the business, which is basically free labor, which is completely unfair. And kind of, I don't agree with that either. But at the same time, I'm all for live tasks. Like if you get to a second interview with me, you're doing a live task. Like, it's a given. It's a given because I like to understand your thought process. I like to understand how you engage with stakeholders. I like to understand what your process is when solving problems and how you approach that problem. What questions do you ask? And ultimately, just how does your mind work? And how does your mind work under pressure? Because in a working environment, there's going to be days where kind of things might be smooth sailing or plain sailing, but there's going to be your days and probably a lot of days where it's going to be high pressure and intense with deadlines, and you need to perform at your best.
Of course.
So you kind of need to emulate that a little bit to see how they apply themselves in those kind of situations.
Of course.
So I'm a big fan of kind of live tasks, definitely. But yeah, take home tasks, they need to be put in the bin and kind of left in 2020.
Yeah. And the thing is, a lot of the times when you are given a take-home task, it's happened to me actually. The person who gave me the task has no idea what the task is.
That's crazy.
And it's a bit embarrassing actually, because they should take a small amount of their time out of their day to understand what they're given across the other candidates. And the thing is, I've done some interviewing before. Like, I've been the interviewer. And I really like when the interviewee asks just as much questions as I ask. You know, so I'm very chatty as an interviewee. And one of the questions I always ask is, what is expected of me in the first 6 months? Why do I say 6 months though?
Because it requires a long answer and you've only got an hour for the interview.
No, because most companies give you 3 months probation. So you're already...
So they're already going to imagine you...
After your probation.
Longer than the probation.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's quite smart. So,
yeah, so I always ask, what's expected of me in the first 6 months? And... that just every time, I haven't used it in all interviews, but every time I have used it, it just sparks a conversation that goes on for the rest of the interview, because that's when projects are starting to come up and they will show me some of their projects or talk about some of their projects that are going off. And I start to get an idea, okay, if I did work here, now I know the type of things that I'll be working on. It removes that unknown feeling, right? How dreadful is the first day? It's like, you know, everyone's going to watch me. I'm going to be walking through the office, the new person. You know, you set the first impression, all of that. It's quite dreadful, you know? So I really like when interviewees do talk just as much as I do.
Yeah, they're definitely, I would say, the most enjoyable interviews. Not necessarily the best interviews, always, but definitely the most enjoyable. But it's free-flowing, right?
So if you're interviewing the design engineer, so it's quite of a new...
Find a chatty one.
Yeah, it's quite of a new area of tech, right? So if you find one that talks a lot about design engineering, then you could learn quite a lot.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And you'll know that they know their stuff, because if it's a very new area, a new niche of tech, and they've got a lot to say about it, then you can start to filter the reels from the fakes, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And they should be able to educate you. You should actually walk away from interviews learning something, I would say.
Yeah. You know, there is one piece of technology that I think bridges the gap between design and engineering a lot. And I think the design engineer, if they are heavy in this piece of technology, I think you know what I'm going to say, is I think that will cut them way, way off, like from the rest. And that's accessibility.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, like when you know, now there's a role, it's, I think it's been around for a while, but it's accessibility engineers. Like literally, that's all they do.
Yeah.
Because there's this assumption that accessibility is just, you know, make sure you've got your buttons are tabbable. And that's it, we've achieved accessibility. You know, and we've got a future episode on just accessibility in the near future, but just to briefly touch upon it, I think that that particular skill is going to be at the forefront of the design engineer. Because you are forced to think in both areas. And not only that, there's a medical aspect to it, because you're thinking about serving those who have disabilities and impairments and stuff like that. So it's just a different area of tech. And I think the design engineer is also going to have a psychological aspect to them, not just creative and, engineering.
How so?
I think there's going to be a lot of psychology built in as well, because the fact of the matter is that in design, it's very psychological, right? But you're not just thinking now how things look. You're thinking how things are working behind the scenes. That's the engineering part, you know? And I think it's going to be an individual, I think my assumption is, it's just well-grounded in, doesn't just know a little bit about each thing, but knows how everything ties in together and at which stage. Because the fact of the matter is, you can find an engineer that's got 20 plus years of experience, and they have no idea
about accessibility,
or no idea about design, vice versa.
Yeah, yeah.
You can find a designer who's absolutely just, you know, excellent at what they do,
but doesn't know how what they do is built.
They don't even know what HTML, like a line of HTML is, to write a simple CSS rule.
It's crazy, right? Like, because for decades now, the two disciplines have been working side by side. So you would expect that knowledge transfer to be happening. But I do think a lot of places operate in a handover capacity where, okay, I've done my bit, over to you.
Exactly. And then
I've washed my hands of it. Now I'm on to the next thing. And they don't. And you'll find like a lot of kind of designers that are out there don't even QA or like follow up to see, hey, like, how's that build going?
Yeah.
Does it emulate what I put forward in the design? Oh, it doesn't. Why? Why doesn't it? To learn about some of the constraints that the developers and engineers are actually going through and having to work around,
right,
as to why certain things weren't pixel perfect or whatever, because then the next time they design, they can then factor that in, right? Instead, you see the same mistakes happening again and again and again, and then you just end up with junk code, man.
And the first time they see their design live is when it's live.
Yeah, that's crazy,
right? And like, hold on a minute, my, you know, this thing that I designed,
I'm sure that happens more often than not.
Yeah. Yeah, 2 months ago is alive. This is a very common thing, by the way, and it's something that is difficult to solve, because the fact of the matter is, everybody has work in the pipeline.
Yeah, yeah.
So the time the developer has received the designer's already on Q3 stuff. You get what I'm saying? If it's in Q2.
It's best practice, man. Like, you need to be on top of it. Like, you ultimately, it's your accountability.
Right.
Right? So as a designer, it's you're accountable for the experience that is put live.
Yeah, of course.
Right? So you want to make sure that everything, you're working closely with your engineers, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, buy them coffee, like, give them biscuits, give them whatever they need to make sure that they align with you and get it exactly how you want it to be. Because ultimately, you know, that's your reputation.
Sounds like the design engineer is going to get all of the perks, man.
Oh, yeah, yeah, 100%. Like, they're going to be everybody's friend for sure.
So, Jay, just to wrap it up, I just want to ask you one final thing. How soon do you think this design engineer person or people are going to be available or start to make a mark in the industry?
In the true sense, I think in the next 5 years or so, in its true sense. Mm-hmm. I think at the moment, there's a few people here and there, like I said, have both skill sets, but they were a dev and now they're a designer, or they were a designer and now they're a dev. I think in the pure sense of what we're talking about, somebody who can literally do everything to a high standard, I think in the next 5 years or so. The reason I say that is because, like I said before, schools are teaching code from 5 years old. There are private coding schools as well outside of the education system.
Yeah.
On top of that. So if you're learning how to build and program as part of your education from a young age, and then outside of that learning, you're doing advanced tutoring and going to a coding school, etc. And then you continue to kind of practice that. And on top of that, if you're creative and you have a natural understanding of kind of what looks good, what feels good, how things should be positioned, layouts, margin, spacing, how everything comes together collectively to kind of create an experience. And you have that scientific side of you that is just intrigued by customer behavior and learning from that and building from that, then naturally you're going to fall into the world of design engineer. And I think we're not too far off from that, because a lot of these kids, especially in the UK, started being taught this in schools from like 2013.
Yeah.
So a lot of them are nearing university age in the next kind of 5 years or so. By that time, or in that time even, people could be starting up their own businesses. Mm-hmm. They could be entrepreneurs, you know, they could just go straight into the job market if they've actually kind of proven themselves, kind of with a solid like portfolio and stuff. Mm-hmm. So who knows, but I think definitely next 5 years or so. Mm-hmm. But what about you? When do you think? Do you think sooner, later?
I think there's actually some individuals already working in that field, but just don't know it.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think, I've done some, I used to contract, right? As an engineer, and I've worked with some designers where I spent the majority of the day with them, you know, next to them. And some days it was very engineer heavy, and some days it was very design heavy. Mm. And we were just teaching each other about terminologies. And, you know, every time I mention something technical, they'll be like, oh, what does that mean? Mm. And then next time I say it, they'll understand. And so I think there's many individuals working in that field or in that particular area, but just don't know. And I think, as you mentioned, I think in the next 3 to 5 years, it's just going to become more apparent, and it's just going to be a thing where you'll see on LinkedIn or all the job boards as design engineering, and then engineering, and then design. And the design engineer is going to be maybe someone who is, you know, more of the senior area, not, you know, entry level.
Interesting. So you think they're going to be more of the senior level.
So I think it's going to be a thing where...
I think they're going to be more of the... They're going into it as a designer.
The reason why I say that is because in engineering, there's a few paths that you can take. And generally speaking, it's usually the management path, where you become like team lead, and then you go on to manage a team. You're still doing some code. You're still technical, but you're more, you know, with the management side of things. And then you've got like... the staff engineer, the principal engineer, the one who's just hands-on, not only helping out one team in the organization, but like all the teams, and they are the go-to person when it comes to any technical issue, any technical problem. And I think design engineer is going to sit somewhere there, meaning on both sides, on designers and on developers. And it's going to be an area where someone can naturally blend into. Why I say this, because you have some individual... organizations that are very heavy on the design side, and most of their engineers are offshore, because everyone in the organization in-house are involved in strategy and copywriting and designing and stuff like that. And then they're a design house, and then they just, when they're happy with the design, they offshore it and get it built. And then you have some companies that are like software consultancies, right, where they do the opposite. So they outsource the design, and they get it, they build it, and then they ship it off to the client. I think the design engineer is going to be someone who bridges that gap and pulls everything together. So I think it's a much more of a senior type of area, because the fact of the matter is they're going to have a very wide set of skills. Their skills are going to be very vast.
Interesting.
And I think entry level is just asking way too much of that individual.
Interesting. Interesting that you say that, because the reason I think entry level is because they're going to be design engineer native, right?
Right.
So from, it's going to be instilled in them from early. So they've already got the skill set to be able to go into industry and apply those skills.
Yeah.
What you're suggesting begs the question now that people like us, for example, or anyone who's kind of senior in the discipline of engineering or design right now would have to upskill in either design or in engineering. Now, the question I've got now is, what one do you think is easier to upskill in? Do you think it's easier to upskill as a UXer, a UI designer, or an engineer?
See, I think it's a question that a designer will say something different to an engineer, and an engineer will say different to a designer. But I don't think it's something they'll have to upskill in.
How?
I think they'll naturally...
Most people don't have it though. Most people don't have the skill set.
Mm-hmm.
Most designers don't have the skill set of an engineer.
Oh, so you're saying someone who is actively pursuing that role.
Design engineer.
Yeah. So they're actively pursuing it. They're not just kind of naturally fell into it. Knows about the role and they're actively pursuing it.
Yeah, as in it can still work the way that you're saying, but what I'm saying is, if you're a senior engineer, how do you naturally fall into being a design engineer?
Passion.
Right, but you're gonna have to upskill.
Of course. And I think that's what I'm saying is that you have to upskill
to be able to really be a design engineer. And same as designers, they'd have to go through some training to kind of really get their skills up to standard.
But they should, the assumption is, they should already have some sort of background. Because if now you have a really senior engineer, quote unquote, whatever that means, and then one day they're just, okay, I see this design engineering role, I better start learning some UX or, that's not a design engineer. That's an engineer who's in their free time learning UX. So maybe you might be right about this role starting at a young age, or maybe we're both right and we have to wait and see in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, who knows? Actually, to the listeners, who do you agree with? Do you think that design engineers are going to be the new entry level into tech, as was kind of UX kind of going over kind of a couple of decades ago? Or do you think that we're going to now upskill ourselves and design engineers are going to be more of a senior, maybe even a leadership position within kind of companies? We don't know what the answer is because we're not there yet. We're starting to see certain things emerge on the job market kind of with the title design engineer. Whether or not they're true design engineers applying for those is to be debated. And if you're listening to this and you consider yourself a design engineer and you disagree with all of the points that we made today, please let us know. Kind of follow us on LinkedIn, Life in Tech Podcast with Jay and Saad. Feel free to kind of DM us kind of through that channel. And if you're listening on your favorite channel, whether that's Spotify or Apple Podcasts, feel free to give us a follow so that you can be notified for the latest drops every Monday. Well, we haven't decided the time every Monday, but it'll be every Monday. Just know that. Until next time, take care.
Take care, everyone.